From Jim, a few minutes ago, we heard a moving testimony of how the pain of childhood victimization can stay with a person for decades after the fact. In the news, we see that schoolyard bullying not only hasn't gone away, it's gone online. Cyberbullying. Now countless kids and adults can pile on a child, causing untold anguish. We've known about childhood bullies for a long time, but still haven't stopped them. A similar crisis has only recently come into our awareness, and that is adult bullying. Big bullies don't disappear when they get big. They have a different playground. Some don't even start bullying until they are all grown up. In the last half century, advocates and survivors of domestic violence have made us aware of that crisis, that epidemic. Domestic abuse is abuse in which adults demean, threaten, and batter their partners or other family members in order to control them. Even though domestic violence continues, at least now it's against the law. There is now help and support for victims. Workplace bullying has not yet been addressed as much as domestic abuse, but it's coming into the headlines. In 2014, the board of one of our local school districts voted to reprimand a fellow board member. This trustee had failed to do anything about reports he'd received about bullying by their superintendent. News coverage and feedback by teachers described a culture of abuse in that school system. Some teachers noted that several principals had bullied them or their peers while the superintendent looked the other way. What is workplace bullying? It is a pattern of hostile behavior by one or more persons against a subordinate or a peer at work. According to Dr. Pamela Lutgen-Sandvik, it can include public humiliation, constant criticism, ridicule, insults, and social ostracism. Bullying isolates and discredits the target person at the benefit of the power and credibility of the aggressor. A bully may isolate a target by withholding information from them, or ignoring them, or spreading malicious gossip about them. The Society for Human Resource Management said bullying behaviors can include shouting, in public or in private, slinging personal insults, ignoring or interrupting people during meetings. Multiple stories include supervisors or peers pointing their finger in a worker's face while threatening them. A man working in a private security firm said his boss would call for a meeting with no advance request of what he wanted you to have prepared. And since you were going to let him down, when you did, he would scream at you, "Get out! Get out of my sight!" Many of the traits of bullying are similar to those of domestic abuse. Threats, irrational demands, ridicule, incessant blaming, and isolation. A man who used to work in the sports fishing industry said his boss would stand close and scream, "You idiot! You couldn't run a blasted peanut stand!" Another person said he could feel on his face the wet spittle of his screaming boss. Usually, the target of bullying is not incompetent or irresponsible. In fact, they may be targeted because of their superior performance or skill, their tenure on the job, or their likability. Yet the shock and unreality of the abuse can undermine your confidence in yourself. Rather than questioning the disrespectful behavior, many targets question themselves. They try even harder, or maybe they give up. A church member told me that her boss's accusations were so ludicrous and unreasonable that she tried even harder. Even as distress, depression, and exhaustion grew, she didn't pursue a transfer to another site. She believed that bullying was ingrained in the culture of the whole system. Maybe it could be worse at another place. She feared the boss had already damaged her reputation. A researcher began studying this problem in Scandinavian countries in the 1980s, and scholars first looked at it in the US and the UK in the 1990s. How big is the problem? Studies indicate nearly 30% of US workers have experienced bullying at work. Even though it's new in our headlines, you can find workplace bullying in the Bible, along with other types of abuse, inequity, and violence. An example from the book of Genesis: Laban, the father of Rachel, promises to allow Jacob to marry her after giving Laban 7 years of labor. But Laban deceives Jacob. He gives away his daughter Leah instead, whom Jacob hadn't asked for. In order to win Rachel's hand in marriage, Jacob is compelled to work for Laban another 7 years. How frustrating. And of course, the daughters have no choice in the matter. The Hebrew prophets Isaiah and Amos, while attacking other kinds of social injustice, also call out bosses who cheat workers out of wages. Serial bullying is what happens when a targeted person is driven to quit or is fired or maybe goes out on disability, and the bully identifies a new target. One woman said she and her peers saw a new person, an unfortunately mild-mannered new person, and labeled that person the bully's new chew toy. Serial bullying, when it happens, it shows that the problem is with the perpetrator's behavior and not with the individual's performance. But wait, aren't we just talking about workplace harassment? Isn't this discrimination? Bullying is not the same thing, legally speaking. For aggressive behavior to be charged as harassment or discrimination, the victim needs to be in a category known as a protected class. This includes gender, ethnicity, disability, military or veteran status, religion, and so on. If the bully is of the same gender or ethnicity as the target, it's harder to prove the behavior as harassment. In and of itself, bullying is not against the law. In recent years, however, that's been changing. Every year, more states pass legislation defining and outlawing this kind of abuse. California now requires any supervisor in a firm of at least 50 workers to receive training in abuse prevention. But what if there's a real disagreement in the workplace? Do we just avoid it, lest we be seen as a bully? If somebody's not performing well, how do we address the problem? The key question is how we handle it: with respect, firmness, and clarity, or with antagonism and ridicule? An old friend of mine has led a not-for-profit agency, managed a large government office, and taught social work in college. He said that in any workplace, disagreement, conflict, and stress are going to take place. We are going to hear feedback we don't enjoy, or we're going to have to deliver that feedback. But a pattern of disrespectful words, relentless criticism, isolating behaviors, and threats are not normal. They are abuse. In my 20s, I was a project coordinator in a state agency in another part of the country. The boss of my boss was an ambitious, middle-aged white man who was politically connected. Personally, I never felt bullied by him, but I never trusted him. I'll call him Mike. He was demanding. Not in the spirit of, I know you can do it, but with lots of profanity. He berated some colleagues and he would gossip about them. He ridiculed other leaders at his level. One time in our office, he pointed to a young woman down the hall. He said, Roger, if I were your age and single, I'd be on that in a minute. This guy was not a person to whom I could come out of the closet or trust with much personal information at all. Of course, this meant that I did not say much about myself to anyone in the office. Once, after a few drinks at a dinner with me and an outside consultant, Mike told a story about almost getting caught when he was out with a woman other than his wife. Once at a staff dinner, he put his hand on the knee of a colleague and offered to be of help to her in any way that I can. Fortunately, I was able to relocate from headquarters and to work in our agency's office in a big city elsewhere in the state. But I still was working under Mike. When I was away at a meeting, he'd use my desk and my phone. Once I found a white envelope on my desk. In his handwriting, it said, Roger, hold this for Mike. Then on a conference call with other people, he said, Roger, do you still have my envelope? Yes, I said. I didn't ask. I did find out later that he was using my desk to stash condoms for his trips to the big city. He was happy to tell me. Fortunately, a shakeup and a reorganization left him with no staff and put him in a small office until he got a much better paying job at another organization. By the time he left, however, you could not undo the hurt he had caused. The agency could not bring back the staffers who had left it out of hurt and frustration. It is disillusioning to have your job, for any reason, become a source of dread, fear, and pain. Moreover, the ordeal of being a target can almost break the spirit. People reported the situation can feel like being treated like property, like doing time in prison, like being an abused child. Constant criticism or threats disconnect a worker from their job, making it harder to perform. In surveys, about 50%, half of workers report having witnessed abusive workplace behavior or been aware of it. Even when workers are not targets themselves, witnessing abuse promotes fear and secrecy in the system. A witness may feel both relief that someone else is getting the cruel attention and shame that they are letting it happen. Sophisticated bullies hide their behavior and curry favor with superiors and human relations departments. They make a complaining victim look like a troublemaker. They go after the targeted person's self-esteem. Yet it's worth noting that bullies often feel insecure about their own position. Whether at work or at home, an abuser's goal is control, and their tool is humiliation. How do you deal with such behavior if you are a targeted person? Well, I'm not a human relations professional or an attorney. I'm not an expert. But I've learned there are websites and workbooks to help you recognize abuse when you're going through it or seeing it happen. Advocacy organizations are getting legislation passed state by state. Support groups and therapists are also good resources. From the reading I've done, I can appreciate a few approaches that can help. In the workplace, it's important to document the behavior and the words that you feel are unreasonable or humiliating. Keep a record. Of course, the tactic of some bullies is to document their accusations as well. Another good reason to keep your own record and note any witnesses to any abuse. In making their complaints, some targeted people have actually made use of the written messages of their aggressors. They have even used the documentation that the bullies have kept themselves. What about confronting a situation, addressing a bully directly? Well, if you can evaluate how much risk it might put you in, then you can decide whether it's worth the risk. There is no easy answer. However, lashing out in hurt or anger will probably hurt your case. Instead of reacting, it's wise to wait and reflect before choosing how you're going to act. A senior bank executive returned from a week-long professional meeting and discovered that the bank president had been accusing him of avoiding his work. Even though this time away had already been approved, the CEO was announcing that the person was off on a boondoggle. On return, the bank officer decided to go into the president's office to complain. He was fired on the spot. This personal blow became a financial hardship for that middle-aged man's family. It is wise to choose when and how to speak up, and whether or not to do so. Perhaps if this man, this bank executive who got fired, if this person had had a family member or trusted peer or friend or mentor, he could have first considered other options. As I noted, many workers have reported that they have witnessed abuse inflicted on their coworkers by supervisors or by peers. It can be a great relief to a targeted person for them to hear you say that you see what they're going through, that you tell them it's not fair. Maybe you keep your own records of what you witness in case it may be helpful sometime. And consider when standing up to a bully becomes your moral obligation. Consider when it's time for you and others to rise together to stand against a pattern of abuse in a system. At work, at school, or in families, a bully works on you so that the size of your orbit shrinks to just being around them. They often project their own fears and failings onto you, disloyal, uncaring, not committed, incompetent. They exploit what you are insecure about or a fault that you worry about. Speaking of his mother, one man said, "My mom would call me selfish whenever I didn't do what she wanted. I never wanted to be perceived as selfish, so whenever she flung that in my face, I'd end up going along with what she wanted." He found help. He turned to people, other people, who knew him and admired him. They affirmed his gifts of caring and kindness. The man came to realize that his mother was indulging her own selfishness by manipulating him. We all make mistakes and have flaws. We need encouragement to accept our imperfections in order to be less vulnerable to manipulation by people who would manipulate us. In any setting, abuse operates in a way to break our spirits. We need to cultivate ways to renew our spirits. This is what we mean by spiritual practice. Simple things like rest, reading, music, meditation, prayer. We need shared meals with others. We need regular exercise to stay healthy, regain energy, renew our perspective. Isolation is harmful to human beings. When times are painful, going it alone is dangerous. In her book about going through abusive situations, consultant Sam Horn advises us to find and reach out to those with whom we can share friendship, respect, and encouragement. Cultivate activities that give us joy in life and stay involved in them. This is good advice for getting through life in any situation. Reach out to people with whom we can share friendship, respect, and encouragement. Cultivate activities that give us joy in life and stay involved in them. To build our self-esteem, we need others around us who can see us for who we are and who love us and accept us for who we are. We need the company of people who can accept our flaws and affirm our gifts. This is where we come in, a community. We don't have to be experts to affirm the worth of someone going through a hard time. We don't have to fix another person's problem to say, "I see you. I see you are hurting. And I'm sorry." We don't have to be experts to share the joy and the healing of human fellowship. We just need to show up, to be present and aware, and to show that we care. My closing words today are my prayer, a prayer for everyone here and for anyone in any place, especially when you are going through a hard place. For all who feel beleaguered and alone, may you come to see that you are part of something larger than yourself. For all who doubt yourselves, may you know you are loved. May you learn that you are worthy of love. May you know that your life is a gift and that you are a blessing. So may we live, all of us, and so may it be for everyone, everywhere. Blessed be, and amen.